Podcast Network Asia. Network Asia.
I would say yes, it is hard. It's not easy, but I think with the support system in the family and the support system of the family of my wife and my wife just really, you know, she's been incredible taking care of the kids. I think it's true when they say that the best things in life happen to you as well, and the success happens to you as a man. If there's a woman behind it, so for every successful man, it's a woman that is really also working hard behind it.
And welcome back to another RJ Ledesma podcast. Thank you for everybody listening here in the Philippines and all over the world. My name is RJ Ledesma, and here on my podcast, I interview the country's pioneering business personalities and entrepreneurs and learn more about how they think about business, what are their success secrets, and can we learn how we can also hack those success secrets, how they've innovated their businesses during this pandemic, and more importantly, what opportunities do they see emerging in this new normal and even in the next normal? Now, is there a business personality or entrepreneur that you would like me to interview here on the podcast? Please let me know. I would love to have them here on the podcast. Just drop me a message. We are live also right now on Kumu, CBRC TV, Global Pinas, and of course, Bounce Back Network. Now, tonight, I've had many points of intersection with our next entrepreneur, but this is the first time we're really going to have a very in-depth discussion. He is the youngest EdTech entrepreneur here in the country. EdTech meaning educational technology entrepreneur. And his name is Dan Angelo de Guzman. He, at 31 years old, is the pioneer behind the cloud-based IT assessment and training products app called CloudSwift. And he's the company's founder and CEO. But that's not the real story we have here tonight. The story I want to tell is the story towards his success, because before going up all the way to the cloud, he had a very high ladder to climb, and he fell on that ladder many times. He has had his own share of failures, especially in his first venture in his enterprise tech company. And I'm sure that there are many startup entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs per se out there who want to find out more about what mistakes did he make along the way that finally helped him establish his more successful startup right now, CloudSwift. So can I please welcome here right now, Dan Angelo de Guzman. Dan, kumusta ka dyan?
RJ, thanks for having me. Kumusta rin?
Hi, Dan. Thanks so much for guesting over here. Kim Tuazon de Guzman says, I can't wait to watch Dan Angelo de Guzman here tonight. Thanks so much, Kim, for watching here tonight. Wow. Well,
she's my number one fan. She's my wife.
Number one fan. I can see that right now. Number one fan. Thank you so much. He should get a special reward after he's done with this podcast tonight. And the funny thing is, Dan and I were talking offline before we came into the program, and we've had points of intersection where we've met in the past. No, number one is we were both in the same Asia CEO Awards in 2019. Is that right?
Yes, correct. Yeah, that's right. You won. And, you won that time. Yeah.
Yeah, that's for the SME of the year for Mercado. Yeah, and you were part of the Circle of Excellence for young leaders.
Young leaders of the year came from Ernst & Young.
Yeah. Ernst & Young. But this is for CloudSwift, right?
Correct. Yeah, correct.
Okay. But prior to that, our other intersection was a very delicious one. Where your cousins were actually part of one of my Mercato vendors, one of my beloved Mercato vendors, actually.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Way back 2016, 2017. Yeah.
That's right. It's called Eats Meets West. They had a nice burger fusion, right? It was a nice
Bagnet Burger. Yeah.
That's right. Bagnet Burger. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Hopefully, those guys get to join us right now in our upcoming Mercato Cloud Kitchen, which is coming up in the Ayala Mall circuit. So, anyway. Dan, thanks so much for joining us. If you guys have questions for Dan, please put it in our chat box. We would love to address some of the questions, especially for those of you from the startup community who want to find out maybe some of the bootstrapping mistakes he made along the way, or you want particular insight from Dan on your road towards entrepreneurial success. Please feel free to add it over here in the chat box. But just to start off, Dan, CloudSwift. Many people might not be too familiar yet with what CloudSwift is all about. So, you know, if you were to make that elevator pitch to me right now, what is CloudSwift?
So CloudSwift is an edtech company that provides two solutions. Mm-hmm. So one is addressing the technology upskilling or online technology learning requirements of education sector and professionals.
So, and then, what do you mean specifically by upskilling for those people who aren't familiar with the term upskilling? Yeah,
so when you say upskilling, it's like, let's say, for example, you were previously like laid off from your job from a hotel and you want to be trained as a junior data analyst so that you can find better career opportunities. So, we provide these programs from our technology giant vendor partnerships such as Microsoft, Alibaba Cloud, AWS to provide those unique technology learning experiences so that they would be able to have those new skills that are in demand of today, like in demand today in terms of the digital industry. So that's the future ready skills product that we have.
It's from skills, whether traditional industries, non-tech industries, and you upskill them towards tech related future ready skills. So these are all everything that they take in CloudSwift are skills which can be used online or on the computer.
For example, data analytics, AI, data science, cloud. So all of these modern technology jargons in terms of skills. So those are the types of skills that these non-tech people or even existing technology professionals that would like to train more in terms of these to train better to get better themselves as a technology professional. So they use a CloudSwift platform, but normally we liaise or we work with so this is B2B. Our platform is being used by the companies that they work for or by the universities that they are students at.
I see.
Yeah.
So you were saying that there are two sets. So the first one is to upskill, and the second thing that CloudSwift does is what?
The second thing that CloudSwift does has really accelerated when pandemic hit. And then became like a post-pandemic long-term solution. We're in utilizing the same technology that we use in our online learning platform for technology skills. Say, if you're learning technology skills, say, reading books, watching videos will never be enough. You have to do hands-on online so that you have to have practice-based learning. You know, if you want to learn coding or data analytics and all that, those things are not going to be enough. You have to learn it by doing. So in order for you to learn by doing, we have a virtual labs technology. So that virtual labs technology, siyempre, it became in demand when all of the universities and education institutions, no students are going to the physical campuses. Mm-hmm. So meaning to say, using our virtual labs product, we digitally transform and take their physical computer facilities online so that the students that are learning at home right now can access the physical computer labs online so that they don't have to go to the campuses and sit down in a physical lab to do their Adobe, to do their labs in Microsoft, to do their labs in Adobe or AutoCAD or things like that. So basically, that's the entire end-to-end solution that we provide as an edtech company.
So sort of the second solution which you created was actually a result of this pandemic. Sort of like that's a silver lining which accelerated.
Exactly. So it's a product that we have been already selling, but it accelerated due to the pandemic.
Exactly. So this is this is a wonderful story for many entrepreneurs to figure out, because we often tell people that, you know what, as an entrepreneur, and I'm sure Dan, you can appreciate what I'm saying, is that we as entrepreneurs are not taught to think that, you know, it's a bad time or it's a good time. No, we're taught more of like, what is the opportunity in bad times or good times? And let's figure that out along the way, right? That's really right. Yeah. That's really how things have went. When you tell us about what CloudSwift is all about, no, what's oftentimes missing, and which is the more important thing, is the narrative. Meaning, what problem were you initially trying to solve when you created CloudSwift? And is the CloudSwift right now what you thought of when you originally created it, or did it iterate to what it is today? So let's start off with your first story. Paano mo naisip? How did CloudSwift come about? What was the problem that you were thinking about?
Yeah, so basically, CloudSwift is already my second venture that time, and I've always wanted to build a product that revolves around solving problems, or solving very, very hard problems in the education sector. And it came about where, you know, since my background in my career, I've been a technology consultant in Accenture. We've been doing a lot of technical trainings as well internally. And then this actually came about from the first venture that I started. It's also an edtech company, but since, you know, I made a lot of mistakes and failures on that one. So it's sort of like CloudSwift is like the better, you know, more grandeur version of what I've been trying to build since I became like an entrepreneur during the early years. So I've experienced that aha moment while I was like tasked, you know, to create technology training boot camps in a company as big as Accenture. And then it took us like over 3 months just to come up with a program. And then we were like all working on like a physical data center. We have to go to the physical data center and we need to fix all these servers manually. And everything has been tedious. And I felt like if a company as big as Accenture experiences this problem, then there must be an opportunity here. When I felt like, okay, so Accenture is already like, you know, a multi-billion-dollar company, and they have like hundreds and thousands of employees in the Philippines. But as established as this, if this is being experienced in Accenture, then much more in the same peers of Accenture, plus the much lower, smaller, medium-sized technology
companies. The MSME style, the medium and micro.
And then also, more the while for the education sector. And then those were the heydays that I know, and I felt like, you know, all of these jargons like AI, machine learning, cloud computing, that time around 2011, 2012, nobody understands what it is.
Oh, that's right.
So that's why I've known since day one that with these technologies, upskilling or reskilling opportunities have to be given to all of the next generation professionals. That's why I thought to myself, okay, starting in the Philippines, since there's a need in the Philippines in terms of digital transformation, digital skills, so it's good to start in the Philippines as a home country, as a market, and then expand later on if it makes sense.
Hey there, this is Nikki Torres. Check out Chief Best Friends, a podcast for work besties everywhere. If you've ever wondered whether business and friendship can mix, then this show is for you. This is brought to you by Podcast Network Asia.
Why was education your biggest? You said, you know, you had a passion to look into edtech. Why particularly edtech? From everything that you were exposed to, both in your previous life working as a consultant for Accenture, and even in your previous startup, which we will talk about later on, no? Why was education something that resonated with you?
Well, I think first of all, I think in the context of like during my humble beginnings, when I was during high school and during college, I've always wanted to, I'm a bit of like an achiever when I was in high school, but I always felt like I hope and I wish that everybody else would have the same mindset as well in valuing education to get ahead in life. And it has always been my advocacy that I think once resonated by others, they can increase their chances in success. And then during the time that I was a consultant in Accenture, I've never expected that I'm going to be I've never expected that I'm going to be able to expose myself in training and doing upskilling or doing training programs or working on training programs with my peers and other employees in Accenture. So when my boss that time gave me a project, create a cloud computing curriculum for Accenture employees and, you know, talk about VMware and all these, like, you know, very big technology brands in terms of technology. Like, I thought it was going to be like a very boring task. And then I realized that, you know, this is something that I really enjoy. Like, you know, it's like imparting your knowledge as you train your peers in terms of new technologies. It's like something that actually also uplifts me as a professional, because I can see that they're satisfied and they're fulfilled because they got to know what cloud computing is and how to, you know, they learned virtualization. They learned all these new technologies during that time when I did the upskilling. And that time I was like really the youngest consultant in Accenture. So it was like a pretty good achievement, like tap in the back for me to, oh, you're one of the youngest, or you're the youngest consultant, but you're the one doing the training. So it's like people are looking up to me that time. And at the same time, I had the opportunity to impart my knowledge in new incoming employees, new IT professionals coming in, for them to learn cloud computing. And I know that at the time, like I said, cloud computing is really, really new. And nobody knew, like, not everyone knows about it, like, compared to what it is now. So, you know, it was a great opportunity to be part of that journey.
So I can see what the first thing that you liked was really the idea of the that you could help people with their skill sets, right? That was one thing that you liked. Yeah. The training that you gave, it sort of made you, and there was also the what I call the psychological or the psychic reward for you, you know, that you're able to teach people. That seems to be why education seems to be something that you appreciate here so much.
And then while I was actually doing that in Accenture, I kind of like tried, you know, going back to my alma mater, and then I contacted Mapua, and then I said, you know, I wanted to try teaching like bachelor's degree or whatnot. Mm. But unfortunately, I couldn't, because there's a requirement of a master's degree.
That's right. No.
In the universities, if you want to teach. So sabi ko na lang, I told myself, I'll do this in the corporate world for now. And then maybe with a potential education technology company that I can build in the future, that's where I can contribute better.
I mean, it's much exponential. Yeah. It's not just one school, but several schools, a lot of schools all over the world that you can help. Now,
that's right.
Okay, let's go back again. You thought of the idea now for Cloud Swift, right? Okay, this will be a platform to help people upskill. Really, that was your basic idea, right? It's a platform, an online platform to help people upskill.
Specifically in technology skills.
In technology. Yeah. What did you have to do next from there to sort of concretize the idea? People are wondering right now, where did you get the money? How did you develop it? What did you do next?
Yeah. So first thing is like I said, as a second venture already, I quit Accenture. Like, I only spent like 2.5 years in Accenture. I quit 2013. And then I had a short stint as a consultant since January to April of 2014. And then 2014, I met one of the most sought after investors in the Philippines as well, and in Australia. His name is John Auroch.
Future Now Ventures.
Yeah. So Future Now Ventures, I met him, but that time, that was 2014. He was still starting up the VC firm that he's building, which is Future Now. We met when I was pitching my first company that time, the first startup. I didn't expect that he's going to be there. I was just pitching it to one of his businesses and one of his companies that I was trying to get as a pilot customer for that first startup that I had. And then it just so happened that he was there. And then he said, hey, you know what? You have something here. Maybe you can meet me after lunch. Let's go up in the office and let's talk more about your story. And then what happened was I went back after lunch because I had to get back to my day job that time, which is like I had a short stint as a consultant after Accenture because I needed to sustain myself. Like, you know, I didn't come from money. I thought that I'm just going to climb the corporate ladder, and then this happened. And then when I met John Auroch again in the afternoon, he said, you know, I told him about my story. I told him how young I was. I told him how I started. And then he knew the fact that I was actually doing it on the side because I still have my day job. And then he said, you know, one important thing that that resonated to me that he said, if you want to run a successful business, you have to go all in. You have to be full time. So he understood my situation. So that's why I said, okay, so why don't we do this? I'm going to get you as an entrepreneur in residence in Future Now Ventures. I'll give you salary, and your job is to run your own business. With no equity in exchange, nothing, no exchange at all. He's just really being really generous and kind and nice to mentor me. He probably got interested in the story and how young I was and whatnot. And then I really wanted to learn so much in entrepreneurship because I never thought that I'm going to be an entrepreneur. I don't have any experience in entrepreneurship or business. So I said, okay, this is great. I'm going to be mentored with someone that has already done it in the enterprise cloud technology space. Mm-hmm. And I'm willing to do it. So I shook his hand and okay, let's do this. Since then, I became an entrepreneur in residence in this VC firm. And I've just been really focused on my first startup that time. And then with the first startup, started that company with a couple of angel investors that I met during the early years, like late 2012, 2013. If they were like OGs, I think I'm probably one of those young OGs that time on the tech space, like, you know, during that time that the ecosystem of this.
That's right. It was still very, it was very nascent at the time. It was still developing. It isn't what it is today.
Yeah, it is. Like very, very few people. Like when you go to an event, you would know all of the founders.
You know everybody already before. Yeah, yeah, you go to the same event. Same faces exactly, every time before. Yeah.
Exactly. So I've done all of that. I've done startup competitions, like, you know, I've done E27 startup competitions at that time. I've met a couple of angel investors that put in some angel money. And then when they invested, one of the mistakes that I made that I've only realized while during my mentorship as well with the Future Now Ventures and John Ark and the rest of his team was that, you know, to take care of the cap table, right? Because when I got that first investment for my first startup, and my vision for the first startup is just really build like an online learning platform with some technology courses. And we only ended up building like an online learning platform since there's only like a few angel money fund that I raised. We've incorporated it in Hong Kong. We've done all that stuff. And then we've only hired a few contractors to build the product. So there's no really full-time engineering people working on it, focused on it. So In terms of product, it was really premature at the time, but we were really doing our best to really get out there. Since my cap table,
just for people who might not be too familiar with what a cap table is. I mean, let's go back a bit startup 101. What do you mean by a cap table? So people who are starting up know exactly where they're supposed to take their business.
Yeah. So sorry. That's right. So for example, cap table is like basically the shareholding structure. So if let's say, for example, RJ and I will get into a business, he will own 60% and then I will own 40%. So that's our cap table. So that's an example, right? So basically it's a table that you would see all the shares of your business partners and investors and yourself as a founder. So basically what happened that time was since I was very, very young, I didn't have any experience. So I thought that giving up 60% of the company was okay. I thought it was okay. Okay, because I didn't have any experience in those things. So for me, my main goal is to just really make it happen. I just really wanted to build a product. I want to get it out there. I wasn't really paying attention so much on those shareholding structure. And I kind of like learned that it's very, very important, most especially the early stage, because if new investors would come in for you to scale and grow, it will be very hard for them to invest if they saw that the founder is not the majority shareholder. I've learned that.
So one of the first lessons, founders should be the majority shareholder of the business.
Most especially during the early stage.
Got that.
Okay. So if you have the bigger pie in the money, it's okay. But right now, during the early stage, it's really close to impossible to raise more. So when that happened, unfortunately, part of that failure is we needed to shut down that first venture because we were already trying to, like, when it was proposed to restructure the shareholding cap table, my previous angel investors didn't agree with it. So that's why we just had to mutually agree and say, okay, we are at the disagreement. It's okay. You know, things happen like this. Let's just wind down the startup. And then I told them I'm going to continue with my vision. I'm not going to take any code or whatnot. I'm not going to take any product, but I'm going to be I'm going to be continuing my venture. I'm going to start a new venture in the education technology space, right? Yeah. And then I told them, and hopefully, I told them, hopefully, when I become successful, I'd be able to pay them back with their previous investment. So with the original, with the very first startup. So
we actually went back to really review your first startup, because in light of your second one, that's really where it came from, the origin.
It's all interconnected,
I want to just go back a bit more.
Because
when you were looking for the pain points of your current one, what was the pain points of your Cloud Swift? What were the original pain points of your first business? What was the name of your first startup?
Rocket Labs.
Rocket Labs. What was Rocket Lab initially when you began up? Is it the pain point that you also had for Cloud Swift, or another pain point for Rocket Labs?
Well, it's like I would say that Cloud Swift is like a huge globalized iteration of what was Rocket Labs before. So Rocket Labs was like a very, very small concept of like trying to, you know, since I got that aha moment from my Accenture consulting career, and then I thought of, you know, building a product that can hopefully be used by the Accentures of the world in terms of training and technology, and then hopefully have like a centralized learning system or learning platform wherein Accenture employees or Accenture experts can create technology courses inside the platform, and then it will become like a community of courses for each company. So that was the original idea, and then of course add more tools into the platform to make sure that the IT or the technology learning experience is not as typical just watching a YouTube video, because it's different.
It's boring too, to watch a YouTube. It's not interactive. Exactly, it's not engaging. Oh,
exactly,
that's right.
Exactly. So that was the agenda, or that was the objective of that pain point, is to solve that problem wherein in companies like Accenture or in different schools, there's a lot of people that are doing internal training for the internal employees of the company. So in order for them to gather all of the content that they've created, all of the bootcamp slides, all of the technology snippets of courses that they've created whenever they do physical face-to-face bootcamp, the idea is to put all of those together into one platform so that companies like them can use that as a centralized platform for all. So that was the original.
Rocket Labs.
Yes, correct. Yeah, correct. Oh. Yeah, correct. So it's a platform. So yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then at that point, when it came for time for it to sort of scale, the cap table could not justify
the scaling.
Didn't make sense to scale the business anymore.
Exactly. And because Future Now Ventures, since they're also a VC firm, they wanted to come in, they wanted to invest already, but their main dilemma was the cap table. So that's why they made a recommendation of a restructure. But the problem was all of my current shareholders that time couldn't agree with what I was trying to convince them with this recommendation. So that's why we just all decided to, okay, let's part ways, you know, for now. And this is nowhere to go. If we're not going to be able to raise capital for this, and they don't want to restructure the business. So I said to myself, and imagine that time, like, those are tough conversations. I was like,
that's a really tough conversation, you must have grown five to six years. You matured so much in that time to negotiate, talk about that.
Yeah, we had to learn all of that. So it was a great experience, because from that kind of scenario, you can already learn, you know, you can already learn so much from that specific conversation. Handling tough conversations is very, very important for leaders. So that's why when I was so young that time, you know, and I was very glad that Future Now Ventures has been guiding us even up to now and then since then, in terms of making smart decisions like these. And then when we all decided to part ways, and then, okay, I just honestly told them, I'm not going to stop. I'm still passionate about ed tech. I want to build a business around ed tech, and I'm going to make it successful.
I really like this, where we're taking this conversation. If learning lessons could be monetized, you're a billionaire right now from having learned your lessons from the tough conversations, and also being an entrepreneur in residence for Future Now. So Future Now, they weren't paying you, but you could just be an entrepreneur there, listening to people, getting information. Is that right? Mentoring with them?
They're paying me salary.
They're paying me salary, but
my job, but my, so it was actually Future Ventures helping me as an entrepreneur And as an entrepreneur in residence, they pay me salary to be this, to be a full-time CEO of my company.
Still thinking of what career is best for you? My name is Pat Soyo. Check out my podcast where we answer questions and debunk job descriptions by interviewing professionals so we can put an end to our career search. This is Job Defined. Available on wherever you listen to your podcast. Powered by Podcast Network Asia.
Okay, but at that time, but you start to restructure the company.
Exactly, during the first startup, yeah.
Okay, and then, so parang, yeah. they weren't taking any equity yet. They were just saying, I'll pay you to run the company.
That was a sweet.
If you think about it, that's a sweet deal. That's a sweet deal for you.
It is a sweet deal. That's why when John Ark told me, I already decided. Then I came back to my previous company that time. Then I said, I'm going to resign. I'm going to start my own company. And then I left the next day. And then the next day, I started day one full time entrepreneur. So that kind of transition really helped me into how, you know, really focus on starting a company full time. So that really helped me in get into that zone or get into that momentum.
And Dan, that's really great insight. I mean, I've learned so much as well here from you on at least that sort of startup industry. You need people like John Orak, a really great, generous mentors and entrepreneurs. In your years as an entrepreneur in residence, together with Future Now, can you just share with us what were the key things that you learned during those few years that up to now continue to resonate with you? I'm sure a lot of the startup entrepreneurs here would love to pick your brains and find out more about what you picked up during that stint.
Yeah, so first, you know, hiring the right people is very important, right? It would hopefully resonate and for people to know that if you've raised so much money or you've already raised capital, the story doesn't end there. So for me, that's not just the metric of success. Because when you raise capital, that just means that there's another next step that you need to get to make sure that you'd be able to spend wisely and smartly to make sure that you're going to really realize the valuation and to realize the next milestones that you need to unlock. So hiring the right people is very important, because hiring the wrong people can really cost you millions and millions of pesos or millions of dollars, right? Mm-hmm. So hiring the right people. Secondly, I think is focus. So second, focus is very important for entrepreneurs. So if you are an entrepreneur and you're really, if you really want to take your business or your company to the next level, most especially in tech or even in non-tech, I think focus is important, because if you try to juggle things, like so many things, it also equates to the capacity of you as a person. So if you don't think that you can't do that, then don't do it. You know, don't juggle things if you can't do it. It's building a startup is like having a baby. You have to take care of that baby. You have to nurture that baby until it grows. And then hopefully once that baby grows, you know, it's all going to be a huge impact. And then thirdly is to focus on customers and revenue. Focus on customers and revenue versus chasing investors here and there just to raise capital. Because sadly, for some startups, when they drink their own Kool-Aid so much, they think that raising capital, to the point that raising capital becomes the business model of the company, right?
That's right. So,
hopefully people will understand what I was trying to say here. But you know, it's a warning for everyone, right? I mean, raising capital is really, really good. It's a great strategy. Raising capital is also not easy. So if you are going to be raising capital, it's either you're just in a raising capital mode or not. Because if you're in a raising capital mode, you need to focus on those goals that you need to achieve once you've raised that capital. Because if you don't have any clear direction or any clear plan in utilizing the capital and the proceeds, that's just going to eat you up. So those are the lessons that I've learned for the past years that I've been an entrepreneur in residence, and even during my journey.
Your next incarnation as a startup entrepreneur with CloudSwift. Yeah. Question lang. When you were doing Rocket Labs, was it at that time a profitable, or was it making money, or were you relying on the capital of the angel investor or raising capital for you to continue running that business?
We were just relying on that small capital or small angel money that we've raised. And then we didn't have like really full-time people at that time. So we just hired contractors because it's going to deplete the fund if it was really, really tight. And that time, as you know, like 2012, 2013, very, very early stage ecosystem of the Philippines. You cannot just pitch into a meeting and then you get an investment in the next couple of months. No, it's very hard. I mean, it's actually much easier nowadays to raise funds compared to before, you know. It's very hard. So when I was able to raise that small angel round, we really needed to really tighten the belts. And we were very fortunate that the fund for the salary for me to focus on Rocket Labs that time, on my first venture that time, was actually provided by Future Now Ventures that time. Without any equity in exchange, so it was really like a mentoring sweet deal that they really got interested in helping me out as an entrepreneur that time.
Wow! So having said all that, okay, this puts us in the right place right now to discuss moving on to your second startup now. When you finally did CloudSwift, so you talked about it was still education you wanted to pursue, but you want to sort of pivot and iterate on your original model. You've learned your lessons already from the first one. What did you do right now to set up CloudSwift?
Yeah, so in 2015, when I decided to start a new company, I went to Future Now Ventures again, and then I said, okay, this is going to be my second venture. I'm going to start a new company, and I'm going to name it CloudSwift. And the vision is to change the way how organizations develop technology skills by building that platform that can cater into that niche we're in. We focus on technology skills still, but it has to be like end to end in such a way that we need to be able to provide functionalities to make sure that we enhance the technology learning experience, and then at the same time to utilize that same platform for the educational institutions, so that the educational institutions can also provide opportunities for the students to advance themselves in these skills. So before, we were just looking at corporate in the previous startup, and then we were just looking at having a platform. But right now, in this case, it's a much more ambitious solution. And then I tried to raise capital from Future Now Ventures, and then they've committed the seed investment round that time. So you would see it in all of the news sites that, you know, in total, along with Future Now Ventures and other investors, we've raised a little over $1 million already, a seed round within the time frame between 2015, 2017, and then since then we have been just really revenue generating and cash flow positive. So we started providing these products originally only as a platform, but we were having a hard time in terms of how slow it is being penetrated in the market because we didn't have content. So come 2018, what we did is that we forged really, really big strategic partnerships with companies like Microsoft at the regional level, wherein they have agreed to actually put their modern technology course content into our platform, so that when we go to the companies and institutions, we're not just going to be offering a platform, but we're also going to be offering the content within the platform, and then enhance the learning experience by providing virtual labs. So the ones that I was telling you about earlier about being used by educational institutions right now. And then 2019 came. We had the opportunity to expand not just in the Philippines, but also in countries like Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia, through our global partnerships in Microsoft, because Microsoft actually endorses our product into their existing customer base. So the opportunity to piggyback in the joints like Microsoft helps us out get more customers, helps us more to have more credibility, because we're talking about enterprise space. And then here are these account managers in Microsoft sitting on their offices, in their fancy offices, actually having selling CloudSwift as part of their KPI. How amazing is that, right? So it's like, yeah, it's
in fact, you know, you're selling the business for them. You're helping them reach their KPIs by getting them out there. So actually, that was a very strategic move on your part, because when you got them on board, they said, these guys are going to push my product for me, and I'm going to push them as well. The first one was meant to be sort of like targeted towards corporations. The second one, naman, was targeted first towards schools. Was that right? When you did CloudSwift, it was more, you wanted this to go more for schools. Is that right? Or schools and corporations?
Both. Corporate learning and development, and then education.
Well, what made you think that school or school-based learning using this one would be a good way to increase the business? Because some people would say that it's more difficult to bring, especially here in the Philippines, it's a big business, but it's not that easy to get into schools, diba? Why did you think that schools would be a good market to broaden your platform?
When we started CloudSwift, we've been speaking and talking, we've been growing all of our relationships and establishing our relationship with the existing educational institutions. So we always talk to them, even though they're not yet buying our solution that time. We always, value the feedback that they give us. And then gathering those feedback, it turns out that it's easier and much faster when you go to an educational institution that you are selling them not just a platform, but it has content already that they can utilize to incorporate in their curriculum. Because that's what the schools doesn't have. They don't have the time to digitize and add more meat into their curriculums, most especially if they would like to incorporate modern technology skills in their curriculum, such as AI, data science.
So, in other words, parang, if you came to them, platform ka lang, di ba? I mean, technically, di ba? Platform ka lang. But because you had this content from Microsoft, you're not just a platform, you are a content management platform.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And then plus, of course, it's not just any content. It's a content that actually enables modern technology upskilling that has functionalities to enhance the technology learning experience. Because they're not just going to watch videos. They're really going to practice in actual labs.
And may employment opportunity after they're done. Because when they're done, it's really a program that people will want to hire you.
Exactly. Because once they're done with the course, they can get a digital credential that has Microsoft logo branding on it. So it's easy. It's somehow an easy sell for students and schools. And then it's also a good revenue opportunity for private schools and institutions, because they can actually leverage the platform and the content products of CloudSwift together with Microsoft, AWS, and others for them to be able to offer elective programs that they can charge tuition fee-based models that is outside of their traditional curriculums. So that increases their LOBs or line of businesses path. So that's why it makes sense for them to invest. Yeah.
Now, what can you explain just for the people here who are listening right now? How does the business model work for CloudSwift if you come both into schools and into companies? Is it software as a service type charging, or is it like a subscription based charge? Please explain to people for people trying to learn more about how they manage this type of things. How does the business work?
So it's either an annual subscription or a per semester subscription. So in our two product mixes, in our technology skill programs, we do have a model wherein the schools would buy a bulk of course enrollment SKUs. And then let's say, for example, minimum is 500, and then they pay, let's say, $19, which is very, very cheap as a starting minimum, like 1,000 pesos per SKU for 500 SKUs at an initial minimum per year. And then they get already the white labeled platform with all their branding and logo. And then all of the content is there. All of the virtual lab environments with those technology courses are there. And then the digital certificates and credentials are already part of that. So it's a package wherein once they buy that bulk, they can just distribute it to X number of students. So that's the education sector and corporate. Even the corporate learning is the same. So, the likes of Accenture or Hitachi or Emerson, they can just buy, for this year, I would like to order for my 1,000 employees. And it's cheaper for them because, most especially for corporate, the training budget per employee for technical skills is actually we are 90% cheaper compared to. So because it's all online, it's all self-paced. and they're used to like face-to-face traditional, it's more expensive, like 50,000 pesos per professional or per packs. So that's expensive. But in our case, in $19, $29 per course enrollment SKU, they get an access to an online learning platform with labs, with digital certificates, credentials, and then off they go. They can learn anytime, anywhere. And now on the second product mix, which is our virtual labs product. So we do that either as software as a service subscription, as a per semester platform as a service subscription. Wherein mm-hmm. they host it, we can deploy it on their own cloud tenant, and then we charge them on a per lab user session per semester. So I would say our average education customer is like around $100,000, like $50,000 per semester, or $100,000 per academic wow. year subscription. Yeah, it's a really, really high margin, lucrative business model, I would say. And that's why we're so aggressive about this. Like, it's Pinoy built, we started here in the Philippines, but we were able to take it outside the Philippines as well for other universities outside the country are actually using CloudSwift platforms as well.
Hey there, my name is Chloe. Just dropping by this podcast to tell you that I'm on one too. It's called The Great Connections Podcast. Over there, we talk about the lives of Filipinos overseas at ang diskarte sa buhay OFW. So go ahead and listen to The Great Connections Podcast after you finish this episode, okay? The Great Connections Podcast is available on all major podcast platforms. See you there.
The Great Connections Podcast.
Really great. I want to find out more about how it went abroad, but before it did, no, I just want to ask, you know, it sounds like CloudSwift was on an upward trajectory from the very start, but is that the case, or did you struggle a bit at the start? Did you have some moments of doubt? When was the point about when was the sort of like that low point that you had as an entrepreneur when you went into CloudSwift? Na you were thinking, nako, will this business work for me or not? Was there a point to that for you?
Well, of course, yeah, absolutely. Like around year of 2017, I could not forget that moment wherein we had to really let go of some people, and then we had to also decide on some very, very hard and big decisions, because internally there's something that happened within the business or within the company we're in. You know, sometimes when you hire the wrong people, you know, sometimes you really end up creating more problems for you, more headaches and things like that. So one thing led to another, you know, hiring wrong people that you trusted, and key people that you trusted, and then just so happened that you can't. So things like that happen, and that's why when we were running out of capital and running out of funds, we thought, and we told ourselves that we thought, okay, so after doing this, this is our last shot. 2018 was our last shot, RJ. Like that time, it was our last shot. So we told ourselves, if we cannot make enough revenue for the first quarter of 2018, CloudSwift is really going to shut down.
Okay.
CloudSwift is never going to work anymore, right? So that was my realization that time. And then, you know, it was my personal goal. Like I'm telling myself, if I can't do this in 2018, and if we can't really take this to the next level, it doesn't make any sense anymore. So that's why that was the low point. Well, I wouldn't say low point, but that was like somehow like a little bit of an epiphany. We're in, this is an opportunity for us to get better. You know, we sort of like made a lot of mistakes as well between 2015 to 2017 of running CloudSwift, a little bit of ignorance here and there, a little bit of slacking here and there for some people that we really needed to get serious towards the latter part of 2017 until we reached 2018. So it was a blessing in disguise that actually the big guns or the big technology players such as Microsoft really played along with us and really helped us in this long game. That time in 2017, we really didn't have any capital anymore. So we really needed to make sure that we need to thrive our best to get enough revenue to sustain the business. And then luckily, I would say since first quarter of 2018, we have never raised any significant further capital since the seed investment, and we have been sustaining the growth of the business from revenue since 2018.
So what happened so there was actually, at 2018, you were saying, okay, this is our last shot. When did that aha moment for you come that you said, okay, we have to sort of transform the business from just purely being a platform to a content management platform? And how did you bring in Microsoft? I mean, that must have been the biggest point, right? I mean, for me, that was a turning point when you were able to turn, when you're able to get these big companies to give you accredited, very high value added courses. How did you manage that?
Well, ever since, I think this merits to, maybe lessons for everybody as well, that it merits to the fact that since we have been working with Microsoft since the founding of the company, so that is a good indication or a strong indication that never, ever, if you feel like there's a partner that you've been talking, there's a partner or there's an organization that you think you wanted to, really work with for long term, you have to always make sure that you're following up with them. You have to make sure that you're keeping in touch with them. So it's not like it's a new introduction between Microsoft and Cloudsafe. So we have been really in touch with them since day one. They've been our partners. They've known us since the founding of the business. So it kind of like just grew the relationship. And then it was just very, very timely that in the late 2017 that we're about to do that model. And then they were also about to come in, and there, we were already working on it together, and then that sort of like in parallel enhancing the product of CloudSwift as well, apart from that realization of tapping into that strong strategic partner, your question about like, okay, so how, what are the things that pushed us or that made us feel about that, is because in order for us to keep going, we just feel like it's not going to be a sustainable business if we would just rely on the funding and the capital that we get from investors. So that's why, it was like an awakening moment wherein, you take a look at the P&L, you take a look at the balance sheet, and you see, we've been at this for 2 years, and, I'm a very impatient person as well somehow in terms of these things. And, if I see that I don't see any progress like that, I kind of feel like it's so mabagal, and I really want to, push much faster. And that pushes to the fact that, okay, if we see this like this, the trajectory is not really, targeted hockey stick is not yet happening. It's a personal goal that this is our last shot. 2018, we really need to take this to the next level, and then really execute towards making that happen by these strategic global partnerships.
And then The next question I want to ask is that your company went technically global. I mean, for many Pinoys, wow, to have your app, a locally developed app, go abroad for the first time. Yeah. That's like that kind of blows people's minds. How did that happen? Was it because of the Microsoft partnership that they said, oh, there's a campus in Indonesia or a university in Indonesia that's also looking for that? Is that what happened? That's how you grew the business?
A significant part of it, yes. And then more and more partners came over after that. So for example, global distribution in Europe, it started this year as well. I mean, it rooted from the Microsoft partnership, and then kind of like, AWS came in as well to help out, Alibaba Cloud, so all of these guys. And I think that's the beauty of working with enterprise software business. As long as you have a very, very clear and very, very strong strategic distribution channel that you want to build, and then you show them real use cases and real results, that this is what is going to get you. This is what is going to hit your API. This is what's going to hit your KPIs. Because for example, for Microsoft, they want to be able to make sure that they're going to be getting a lot of consumption from their cloud. So our product consumes a lot of cloud. So for them, it makes sense. It makes sense for them to position it more, because the more that they sell CloudSafe, the more that they also generate revenue with their cloud products.
So it's for them, it's sort of like double the revenue stream from the courses and revenue stream from the use of the cloud.
Exactly. And the good thing about this is that all of these account managers in these organizations, they became our extended business development team, even though they're not part of our payroll.
They augmented your business.
Exactly. And then it's not just in the Microsoft Philippines per se, but Microsoft APAC region and global. So that's why, we have like dedicated enterprise channel managers that helps us sell the platform in Indonesia, we have the same person in Vietnam, we have the same person in Singapore, we have the same person in Malaysia, we have the same person in Brunei. So we just needed to really invest a lot of time in enabling and onboarding these teams, and then the rest will just follow, because you just need to make sure that you add value to their existing customer base, because they're not going to introduce you to the customers that they are really, really taking care of so much. Their golden gooses and their silver linings, they're not going to be able to introduce you if you can't prove to them that you can deliver. So it happened when we delivered, and then it sort of scattered across all of the employees and account managers across the region. And then the rest of the countries wanted to do the same, because they want to hit their KPIs too. So that's why, you know, we got introduced to more universities in Indonesia. We got introduced to the universities in Malaysia. And then, you know, pre-COVID pandemic, of course, we had the opportunity to travel as well. So that, you know, doing business in Asia is still very important for them to do face-to-face that time. So that's why, you know, we also travel here and there. But right now, I mean, you would be surprised with this post-pandemic era. Everyone, I mean, we have been closing deals, even just, you know, with institutions and universities. We haven't even met them face-to-face. So it's amazing how we've done that through the channels that, you know, because we have already local people through Microsoft. And then because of that, you know, banking on that strategy, when we became cash flow positive, we decided to invest in hiring some local people in such countries as well, so that we can accelerate much faster.
Great job.
And that's how we went on to the global
stage. Now, bravo for that. And one more question. Just, I know that, you know, I was reading some of the articles which came out about CloudSwift, no? And, you know, you just did an angel round for this one.
Seed round.
And you didn't go beyond that one. Traditionally, many of these companies go for a Series A, Series B. You chose to stop at just the seed round because you said you guys were like a camel. You could sustain yourself. Like a real camel, you could sustain yourself. There was no need to get additional money from the outside. Do you plan to keep it that way because it's really profitable right now, or do you still plan to raise money from the outside?
Well, I would say we think that there's a certain amount of milestone that we think that we didn't need capital yet. Mm-hmm. Because the most important thing for us is, if, you know, for us to raise capital, we need to be able to make sure that's going to go to proper proceeds of really scaling and growing the business, mm-hmm. not because we're running out of cash or whatever, but it mm-hmm. has to be like really intended for growth. So that the purpose for that. So for now, we don't want to speak in tapos, or, you know, we don't want to end the conversation on that yet. But so far, all I can say, RJ, is that right now we want to focus in the next 12 months of our journey in really unlocking these revenue milestones and profit milestones that we want to get, and we believe that we can continue to be really profitable in the next 12 months. So it's just a matter of how long we can. So for example, internally we were talking about, okay, so in order for us to hit our $10 million revenue milestone, we all feel and we think that kind of milestone can be achieved without further capital. We think, right, as of now, for now, we think that we don't need capital to achieve that. It's just a matter of how long it will take. And we're all working so hard, you know, the team is working so hard to make sure that that's going to happen. CloudSwift is not going to go to where it is today without its team, right? So it's not just a one-man show. So there's a lot of incredible people behind this as well. There's a lot of incredible investors and business partners and channel partners that are helping us outgrow. So it's not a question of, you know, how much capital, but because it's somehow with these partnerships, like having Microsoft and AWS and all these other, you know, all these other technology providers and partners that are helping us out scale in the region and globally, it's somehow, if you come to think of it, it's somehow as good as cash.
That's right.
But the difference is you didn't have to directly hire people for that because you have that support already.
And the nice thing is that parang ginap mo yung budget to Microsoft to grow your business if you think about it.
Somehow, yeah. Yes.
And having said all that, now before that, I just want to thank our good friends from Kumu. We also we're also live streaming right now from Kumu. So thanks to our friends from Kumu. Kumu is a Pinoy live streaming app where you can connect with Filipino streamers and celebrities. Use our link in the description to to follow some of our Kumu streamers. Again, thanks again to Kumu. You know what, Dan, I wish we had more time to be here on the podcast. A lot of great insights I personally gained from you to learn about how, you know, how to also, you know, I run a couple of startups myself, and this is great insights for me to tweak the business model along the way. So I want to move on to another topic, which is basically the opportunities that you're seeing emerge, especially from your perspective. I guess, to my mind, I mean, you're seeing opportunities emerging in the educational sector, in the edtech sector, and in other industries. So let's say, for example, if you had time to pursue other opportunities, what would those opportunities be that you are seeing right now as a result of the work that you were doing here in CloudSwift?
Thanks. I think that's a very, very good question. I think that's the first time someone asked me about that question, which is good. I think logistics industry has a tremendous opportunity in the Philippines and in Southeast Asia, because we all know that there's already Lalamove and, you know, all of these other platforms that actually does that. But there are certain problems and pain points right now that are even being experienced. I mean, in my view, based on my observation, mm-hmm. You know, maybe some other people that are watching this show, they might have already thought of, you know, of this concept as well. But I think that, you know, like, for example, in logistics, there's a lot of problems being experienced by actual businesses, such as like the hotels right now. Like, in order for them to reinvent their offerings, they needed to actually cater into online deliveries as well of their own products. But the thing is, they cannot, you know, having to use all these Lalamove and all these apps, there's a need niche, or there's a required niche for that sector we're in, to be able to provide logistics solution as well for those type of organizations that needs to have a centralized single network of mm-hmm. logistics of logistics services just to cater for their needs. So I think that's one. And then in the education sector, I would say there's still a lot of, you know, there's still a lot more problems that needs to be solved. In fact, if I would have the time, or, you know, post CloudSwift, once we become ultimately successful and I would have an opportunity to invest or become an investor or to also start a new venture in the education technology space again, I would say artificial intelligence and machine learning have a very, very bright future in creating products that can help students, most especially, you know, I'm a father myself. I have two kids. My eldest is already 6 years old, and he's also going to school already. So I can spot some pain points, problems here and there in K-12. So I think there's a lot that needs to be done in solving K-12 education pain points, in terms of like, how do you make sure you engage your kids in terms of this setting right now, which is online learning. Like, I mean, it's hard, right? I mean, in a way, as an ed tech company, somehow you're smiling at the back saying that, oh, it's cool. You know, Chad just announced a formal announcement saying that we're not going to go back to face-to-face anymore. Flexible learning is here to stay. You know, we're all smiling in the back and saying, oh, this is good. This is a great opportunity. We're going to grow more locally, and, you know, we're gonna, the schools would need us more. But at the same time, as a father, right, it's if you come to think of it, it's very, very hard to imagine as well. You know, like, you used to have classmates, and you're working together, you're collaborating, you're playing sports together. So all of that are not happening right now. So I think if there's a way for us to leverage the technologies of it is today to somehow take the education experience of most especially the young kids, you know, where the brains are sponge, right? Their brains are sponge, and it's very important foundation for them to learn, or at the best learning scenario. So K-12 education is, I think there's a lot of opportunities, because I see a lot of pain points. So that's why that equates to an opportunity.
Yeah. And there's one thing, as you were talking, something just, you know, occurred to me, that your son is 6 years old, which means that, during the toughest times of your company, 2015 to 2017, you were not only trying to survive with CloudSwift, you were married, and you had a young kid. And that must have been, I can commiserate with you because I'm also run my own company, right? And that must have been quite a challenge that you were raising your kid through the toughest time of the company, and you're also trying to make your marriage a successful marriage. How is that for you? If you don't mind me asking, especially with the raising of your kids, that must have been difficult.
Yeah, it's not 2015. Actually, when we founded CloudSwift, that was April 2015. That was also the month birthday of my son. So my son's birthday was also April 30th, 2015. So the anniversary of CloudSwift is actually my son's birthday. So raising a kid and then raising another kid, which is a startup. The startup is a baby, mm-hmm. and then another real human baby. I would say, yes, it is hard. It's not easy. But I think, with the support system in the family and the support system of the family of my wife and my wife, just really, you know, she's been incredible taking care of the kids. I think it's true when they say that the best things in life happen to you as well, and the success happens to you as a man. If there's a woman behind it.
That's right.
So. Yeah, for every successful man is a woman that is really also working hard behind it. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, that's good because in my company, my wife is the boss. So that's the more important thing, boss of my life and boss of my company. And with that, thank you so much, Dan, for sharing the really great tips over here. I've learned so much from this conversation. And again, if there are companies over here or if there are people who are interested to subscribe to CloudSwift or find out how they can use their services, how can they get in touch with CloudSwift?
Yeah, so for B2C in the Philippines, I would just like to share, RJ, that we just recently formed a joint venture with Dito CME to target Filipino learners. Yeah, so we call it lunaacademy.ph. So it's a totally separate entity that CloudSwift owns as well, together with Dito CME. So we both have a stake on it. And that is our B2C product focused only in the Philippines for Filipino learners so that they can enroll in courses in Alibaba Cloud, Microsoft, AWS, even electrical engineering courses are also there. So we partner with...
Which was your course in college, the electrical engineering.
It's like our localized Coursera, but for the Philippines, instead of having Harvards and the MITs, we're going to have the Mapuas and the LaSalles and the Ateneos and the Enderons. So that's basically the concept, plus the industry parts is Microsoft, AWS, Alibaba Cloud. So go to lunaacademy.ph if you're a Filipino or anybody that would like to upskill individually. Go to our Facebook page, Luna Academy. You will find out a lot of exciting stuff out there. Lunaacademy.ph portal. You can just enroll for free on the course. But if you would like to get an access to the virtual lab environment and digital credentials once you finish the course, then you can just invest like very, very small amount of investment for you to treat yourself, to upskill yourself and learn more. And then if you're an educator, if you're an education institution out there, or if you're an L&D manager of a company and you feel like technology upskilling and online labs are going to be important for you, then you can just go straight to our website, cloudswift.com, and then you would find our contact details there so that you can reach out and would be happy to partner.
And with that, thank you so much for joining us over here, Dan Angelo de Guzman, founder of CloudSwift. And for anybody out there, if you're listening to our program right now, if you guys want to be able to, if you guys are enjoying our podcast here tonight, I invite you to please subscribe to the RJ Ledesma podcast. Again, thanks so much, Dan, for your time. Again, we will see you guys in the next podcast. The next podcast promises to be very exciting. If you guys are following Trece, I'll have if you guys are watching Trece on Netflix, I will have the guy behind Trece over here in my next RJ Ledesma podcast. Dan, much out for that as well. Guys, thanks so much. See you again next week.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.